The Forward Thinker Show is available wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, it's Coral, and welcome to The Forward Thinker Show, the podcast where we share the stories and expertise of global leaders in business and technology. Today, we're joined by Gabriel Pedrosa, returning MetaMate and Director of Technology at NFIU. Gabriel, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. I gotta say, this was a bit of a last minute request. I texted you and you were just like, Coral's doing a podcast. I'm just gonna show up.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
It's fun.
Let's do it.
I like it.
I wanna start off. Gabriel, where are you from? Tell the people.
I'm from Miami. I'm a Miami boy. My parents are from Venezuela, mm-hmm. but I was born here. Mm-hmm. In Westchester, is close by in mm-hmm. FIU. It's like about 10 minutes away-ish. Mm. So I grew up here.
Okay. Venezolano, but Miami mm-hmm. boy through mm-hmm. and through. I got to say, you are in computer science, right?
Yes.
You study in computer science.
Yep.
And now you're going to be returning at Meta in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that must be like from Miami boy to Silicon Valley boy.
Yeah.
We need to know how did you get into tech? How did you get into the computer science world?
Yeah. So I kind of grew up in technology, kind of like everybody else, you know, mm-hmm. like with phones, computers and stuff like that and video games. In middle school, kind of normal, really mm-hmm. didn't get into technology. It was mm-hmm. kind of like every other person, just kind of like playing video games, just hanging out with friends. Same thing in high school. Around senior year, I want to know what I'm going to do in college. Mm-hmm. You know, like everybody's going to pick a major. I think like the most common is like business administration or mm-hmm. something like that if people don't know. And it'll like switch later on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was planning to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I first picked accounting because of my sister. She was doing accounting and I didn't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So senior year, I was going to pick accounting. Was going to go to MDC because I was going to get a scholarship to go to MDC. But I still wanted to go to FIU later on. And I was like hanging out with some friends, I remember one day. And he said he was going to do an internship at mm-hmm. Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
A Microsoft Explorer, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
I thought like, oh, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be getting paid like a good amount of thousands. I'm like, damn, really?
Okay.
So I was pretty intrigued, honestly. Like, I saw, like, wow, you get paid a lot to do an internship. It's pretty cool. Like, everybody knows Microsoft. And so I kind of started looking into computer science because of it. So the initial reason was because, wow, they get paid a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And after, like, surfing the web, like seeing a bunch of projects and stuff, I came across one particular project
mm-hmm.
and there was this French developer named Bruno Simon mm-hmm. and he made this portfolio. It's like a really, really cool website. It's like all in 3D and stuff. So I was super impressed when I saw that and I immediately wanted to start coding. So wow. Initially was because of the money, but then once I saw that like website, I thought it was super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like school websites, they're not like the best built. You kind of have like bad experiences and like a bunch of bad websites out there. So seeing one that was like extremely high quality, it took him, I don't know how long it took him, maybe 6 months or a year to make
mm-hmm.
by himself. And that's kind of really the first step that got me into computer science. Even in like in my senior year or junior year, I was taking a computer science class, mm-hmm. an AP class. And I just wasn't interested. I was just, like, all my friends were there, so we were just mainly talking. I believe it was senior year, so I had senioritis.
Yeah.
Didn't really take the class serious or anything like that.
Just dragging.
Yeah. Whatever. So, I started coding. I started finding, like, resources online.
Mm-hmm.
This was around, like, freshman year of MDC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, MDC, they teach you, like, the basics first. So, like, science, reading, and all that stuff. And then, like, the last 2 years is what's going to be, like, what you're actually going to be majoring in. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, what you're studying. So, like, they'll give me programming classes and all this stuff. So, I didn't want to wait.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning online. And I found this website called Scrimba. So, it's kind of like a boot camp. But you don't have to pay, like, $15,000. I just pay, like, $100. And I just got into it. Long story short, it was super, super fun doing it. And around once I finished, maybe a couple months after, I was looking at FIU and seeing like the, originally I wanted to go to FIU, but then I wanted to expand and see what other options were there, there were. So I was going to go to UM as well. I was looking at one of those. And what I did was I looked at the computer science Discord channels and, the UM Discord channel for computer science is very inactive. But when I went to the computer science channel for Florida International University, it was like, it was popping. There's a bunch of like activity and all that stuff. So, and that was the Init Discord channel. So that's what got me into Init. So while I was at MDC, I was doing some stuff for Init, like, you know, attending the events, talking with people, talking with the executive board and all those things. And that really was like, you know, I can keep going on and on, but that's really what got me into tech.
Yeah, it sounds like you really found a community here when you came into the computer science world. What was it about like that community that helped you so much?
So, and it helped me a lot, definitely. Before Init, I was really just programming on my own. I remember starting out, I was like really just like learning like 10 to 12 hours every day, just programming. So if you guys are familiar with programming and, you know, working at big companies, you have to communicate a lot. So I really wasn't communicating. So that was one huge, you know, like improvement that I got from Init was just communicating with other people. And alongside like, I'm understanding like different ideas from a bunch of like diverse people within the club. So all those things, you know, together definitely helped me. And I remember there's this program called, it's called Init Build Now, but before it was called something else.
Spark Dev.
Yeah. UPE Spark Dev.
Yeah. We were on the team together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my first, like, actually working on a team together.
Yeah, me too.
My very, very first time. Yeah. Like, before that, it was just a bunch of, like, just programming my own, making my own projects. It was kind of boring. But I did Spark Dev with you.
Yeah.
And Sebastian and all those people.
Yeah, Sebastian. Oh, I remember.
And it was, like, 9 weeks, I believe. So we made, like, a really cool full-stack application. What we made was, if you guys aren't familiar with LeetCode, it's basically technical questions that you can kind of practice on, because when you're getting interviewed by like big companies like Facebook or Google, they're going to ask you technical questions. Yeah. So if you pass like them, then you get the offer.
Yeah, it's like a coding puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a coding puzzle essentially. Yeah. So we did that. And with LeetCode, it kind of gets boring after a while, kind of like with programming on your own. So we gamified it. We made it a one versus one. So you're able to bring the element of like, you know, anxiety that you would have in an interview, make it more like a real experience. So we made that project. It was great. I worked on the front end. We had a 3D front end.
Yes.
It was very, very technical.
lots of long nights. I do remember, even though I wasn't on this technical side, I did design it. And I think that design, you get, the engineers, they were kind of like, what is going on?
Yeah. So it wasn't the easiest thing.
It wasn't easy. But I do remember that working with you, like, it was the first time, like, you know, the thing about Spark Dev, like, I wasn't sure if I was going to do it. And then literally the day of, like, the first day, I was like, I asked Vincent, like, the leader of the whole Spark Dev, hey, is there any team available? He's like, just ask and he'll put you in. I go to you and, like, do you have space available? I can design your thing if you don't have a designer. You're like, yeah, sure. Yeah. I was just like, okay. And then we just built it. And we just made it happen. And it was really fun. And I think I remember working with you. It was it was a lot of boys on that team. I'll be honest. It was just me and Chen. This is another girl. And then there was like 10 boys. But like every time that the guys were speaking and then I had to speak, you always made it you gave me space to like speak about like my ideas and stuff. And I really appreciate you for doing that, because not a lot of people do it, especially in this tech space. But I think like when you're a person who's very genuine and, you know, who knows how to communicate properly, it also helps you understand like people who don't really get, like people who get overlooked, like women, you understand that, and so you can help them up. So that's really good that you got that experience here at Init. And then after that, you got into the metaverse.
The metaverse.
Let's talk about the metaverse. Is it real?
Super real.
Super real. Okay, what was that project that you did last summer that really helped you gain more of those web dev skills?
For Facebook?
Yeah.
During the internship? Mm-hmm. So what I was under specifically mm-hmm. was something called Meta University. Mm-hmm. So it was for freshmen and sophomores. Mm-hmm. And they have the notion of, we're going to assume that you don't know anything, so mm-hmm. we're going to put you on CodePath. They gave me a CodePath for 3 weeks in the mm-hmm. beginning. It's I think it was like a 10-week internship. Mm-hmm. So they put me on a CodePath for 3 weeks in the beginning. And then afterwards, you have like 6 weeks-ish mm-hmm. to make a full stack project. So it's kind of different from a regular internship. Mm-hmm. So for the first 3 weeks, it was a code path about web development. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing web development for like 2 years. So I kind of became a teacher assistant for the class. I was helping a bunch of...
Wait, so you were helping the freshmen to build their website and yeah. you were a sophomore.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep, exactly. So for the code path, we made like 2 or 3 projects in total. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, once I finished my project, I mean, we had a week for each one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I had experience, so I finished within, like, the first day or two. Mm-hmm. And with the remaining days, I would either, like, increase my project significantly, like, add more things to it, mm-hmm. or, you know, help other people.
And, like, from a technical side, like, web development, like, people feel like building a website is, like, the easiest thing. They just think, like, oh, we're going to build a website. We'll just go on Wix and drag and drop little elements into a thing, but they don't understand there's a whole thing behind it. So could you explain, like, what is web development and how intricate is it? And, like, how intricate is it? Yeah.
Yeah, so it can get as intricate as possible, like, as much as you really want, to mm-hmm. be honest. It could be as simple. I think, like, looking back on it, mm-hmm. I was kind of, like, hating on Wix, you know, when I was learning web, like, oh, if you'd rather get an engineer, you know, you get like exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. But looking back on it, it just like depends on your use case. So if Wix can solve your problem, then, you know, that's perfect.
Yeah.
But engineers are very expensive. They're the most expensive engineers for, you know, like companies getting paid like $250,000, you know, wow. $500,000, a bunch of money. So it can get very intricate. Some technical terms for actually making web or like first to talk about like what is web.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a way to share ideas on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the first website was this scientist, and you couldn't interact with the website. It was like the scientist made a website to kind of like share his ideas or share mm-hmm. his like research papers or something like that. And, you know, it grew upon that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like what was called, I think, Web 1.0. And then mm-hmm. you kind of hear like Web 3, mm-hmm. if you ever heard of those terms.
Yeah.
So Web 2 is like interacting with other people's websites. So it's just like, again, it's just like a way to share ideas mm-hmm. with other people. And the three primary ways,
mm-hmm.
like the three basics, the foundation of websites are made from HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So you can think of HTML kind of like the skeleton of the human body. You can think CSS being like the features,
mm-hmm.
you know, like what color hair do you have hair,
mm-hmm.
like all these things, like clothes or anything like that. And then JavaScript will kind of be like the interactions, so kind of like the muscles, how the body moves or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
And with these things, people found ways to build on top of those like foundations to try to make websites faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's like libraries and frameworks called React.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of heard of that, or Angular or Vue.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's new ones now called Svelte. And it essentially all tackles the same thing of, you know, making websites as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But engineers also understand like the code. So mm-hmm. they're able to contribute well, you know, and effectively. And make sure it's all safe on top of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like a little bit about, you know, like the intricacies of web development.
Yeah, and there's like two parts of it. So there's from the front front-end development and there's back-end development.
Right.
And you're specializing more in the front-end development, right?
I initially started on the front-end. Mm-hmm. And so to explain, like, front-end is, like, what you can kind of see on the website. Mm-hmm. So let's say if you go to Netflix.com or Amazon.com, mm-hmm. you see how all the pictures are laid out, all the movies are laid out. You know, how you, when you, like, hover over something, the movie gets, like, bigger, mm-hmm. things like that. So that's, like, the front-end. Mm-hmm. The user interface is what people call it.
Yes.
And the back end is more like the things that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it like a wall plug. Mm-hmm. You have your charger, you plug it in. You don't know what's behind the wall plug. Mm-hmm. You just know it just gives you electricity. It helps you charge your stuff. So the back end is basically, you know, whenever you click buttons, whenever you click like a like button on YouTube or you mm-hmm. make a comment or something,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be a server. A server is just another computer somewhere else. And it saves that information. You get me?
Yeah.
So I started initially on the front end. And I started doing 3D on the front end. I started doing 3D because of the Bruno Simone. He has his portfolio in 3D and all this stuff.
Mm.
So I did some 3D. And I got into full stack, actually. Wow. Was when we were doing like the project.
Oh, really? After Code Clash?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I started doing full stack there. And I was already pretty comfortable with like the full stack, the front and the back end. And then I did the internship. It was also in full stack. So, you know, I was pretty comfortable with there as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
So, Gabriel, you talked about like how the front end and the back end of like of the websites and the intricacies of it. But when it comes to a website, it's not just on one computer. You know, if you're as popular as Amazon or Netflix, you're going to have to find a way to scale your website. And mm-hmm. even if you're like a small startup or something, you need to find a way to design like your like the code or like you need to find a way to scale your website. So I heard of a system architecture. It's something that could help with that, but I'm not too familiar with it. Could you explain a little bit more about what system architecture is?
Yeah, so you're exactly right.
Yeah.
So system architecture is, you know, scaling your websites to make it work with millions of people. So it's when you're making websites, you're right, you do have a front end, you do have a back end, you want to make sure your website is working.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's too many people that are visiting the website, like millions or billions of people, kind of mm-hmm. like Facebook, for example, the website can't handle that. You know, like mm-hmm. a sole computer can't handle that. So for system architecture, you're essentially getting a bunch of computers
mm-hmm.
to kind of like handle what's mm-hmm. called like web traffic, the mm-hmm. network traffic. That's kind of like the request, you know, mm-hmm. when you type Amazon.com. And it's able to kind of handle like the load of all the traffic that you're getting on the website mm-hmm. to make sure, you know, it's up and running.
Yeah. Cause what is the, like what could happen if there's too much load, there's too many requests on a website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there's too many requests on the website, then the server, mm-hmm. server being like the backend mm-hmm. part, is just too much and it would shut down.
Oh, wow.
Like if you have ever, I mean, it's very rare, but maybe there's like some websites that, you know, if you send too many requests, and for hackers, actually, they do something called DDoS, mm. which is a distributed denial of service. So what they do, they get a bunch of computers, you know, maliciously,
mm-hmm.
and they send a bunch of requests to a specific website.
Wow.
And that would shut down the website.
Wow.
So, yeah, it would completely burn the whole website.
Mm.
I don't know how long exactly, to be honest. I'm sure they have to, like, you know, restart the whole machine and all those things. But yeah, it's like people know that websites can only handle so much mm-hmm. and, you know, hackers, they, or like malicious people, they use it to their advantage and get a bunch of computers and just shut it down.
That makes so much sense, because that's why people say like, oh, don't spam in the comments, don't spam, don't mm-hmm. send multiple messages, because then if you do that, then the computer's gonna shut down.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it can also be annoying to get like a bunch of spam as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if there's like a bunch of people mm-hmm. and maybe they're like, they're sending the same messages over and over and over and over and over again, mm-hmm. and like millions and billions, that mm-hmm. could be like very strenuous on the server, mm-hmm. you know?
So what is it about like system architecture that helps, you know, like a website builder help them scale the
the website.
So simplicity is always best. You want to be as simple as possible, but yeah, to scale websites, you're going to need like more computers to, you know, kind of like what's called horizontally scale. Horizontally scale being you get like a bunch of the same computers. Think of it like a multiple MacBook Airs. Or you can get, you could do vertical scaling, which is getting like a MacBook Pro. Wow. And it's like a lot stronger than a MacBook Air, for example. So you can do those two ways of scaling. It's more prominent to do horizontal scaling because let's say if you're a MacBook Pro, you know, like a stronger computer, if anything happens to it, the whole website's down. But if you have, yeah, exactly. If you have like five MacBook Airs, if one of them goes down, you're still fine because the other four have the website hosted. Does that kind of make sense?
That's so cool. You were talking, the thing is, I'm kind of curious because you said the horizontal scale, right? So that's part of system architecture. And I think I want to make sure that we hit that, like any sort of, any common misconceptions about web development, like what the common misconceptions people have about it. Let's say if someone wants to build a website for something and, or like they're building a software solution, but they don't know how to scale. They don't know that it can get intricate if you have more users. Like that's something that's really important that you have to think about. And if you don't think about it, then your thing's gonna shut down. Literally, it's gonna shut down, and you're not gonna be able to scale your website or scale your business. That's what it is. So I'm like, what is it? What makes people think that it's like so easy to build a website, or like what are some common misconceptions that are around building websites?
Right. So maybe to your first question, what makes it look so easy is they just don't understand, you know, like all the parts working behind, and maybe when they see like commercials like Wix, or you can make a website in 5 minutes, you know, you can use WordPress and make a website quickly. Yeah, that's true. You can probably make a website pretty fast in WordPress and Wix, but you know, like the technology and all like the work and effort that they took to make that happen, you know, it's very hard. They want to, you know, whenever you're visiting a website, you want it to have like a very smooth experience. You know, you want to, for example, when you're on Instagram or when you're on like an addicting app like TikTok, everything works perfectly. Whenever you like, it works. You know, like the videos load really fast. All those things are extremely technical to accomplish. So we want, like, we being engineers, we want the end user to have like a very simple and understanding experience. That's why we have like, you know, website designers to make sure like the website is easy to follow, you know, like all the buttons are not like too overwhelming for the user. And you know, not too many features where they just like don't know what to do. So, I don't remember your second question though.
Well, I like to think about like the importance of having like building your own, like building the website from scratch instead of having, you know, using WordPress or Wix, because I like to think of it as the grocery store analysis, right? Like you can go to the grocery store and get an apple from there. Or, like, you can buy it from, you know, like, DoorDash or something. You could buy food from DoorDash. But if you are going to be, let's say, if you're going to be selling, like, a bunch of apples, it's going to be more expensive for you to get them all from the app, from the grocery store. So it'll be easier for you. Like, I'll get the materials to build my own farm, and I'll make my own apple, you know, system, and I'll have farmers who will take care of it so that I can scale and I can have more apples. It's going to, like, the return on investment is going to be better long term when you start from scratch, because if you use a third party website, you're going to have to, that's a middleman. And, and like those middlemen, they kind of stop you from sort of like scaling, because you have to go through their rules, and sometimes it's slow to use Wix, honestly, because the drag and drop and all that stuff, it's slow to build that. But I guess, like, if you're trying to build a software solution, it's good to have, you know, start from scratch and under, and have engineers who understand things like system architecture to help make that happen.
I think what you said before, I think it was all perfectly said, like, you know, with the analogy of the garden and stuff.
Of the grocery store.
Yeah, and then making your own garden and all those things and scaling it. Yeah, I think it's super use case specific on whether you should make your own website or not. Maybe, you know, if you have a hobby, like let's start something simple, you know, like you have a hobby and you just want to make websites or maybe you're on Fiverr, you're making websites. If you're able to accomplish the customer's needs using Wix, then you can use Wix, you know, it's completely fine. But know that using something like Wix, you're going to have some restraints.
Yeah.
So building your own website, you have more flexibility, of course. You know exactly how it's built. You know, if you want to add like a feature that maybe Wix can't do exactly how you wanted it, you can do it yourself. There's a bunch of reasons why you probably would want to make a website. As well, it's a very lucrative career. So if you really enjoy making websites and you want to do that, you know, at a company or maybe even by yourself, it's great and it's very cheap, if not free. You know, like people, you know, in like the context of like making a startup, making a startup like using a website is fantastic because it's very, very cheap to host your websites. You know, there's like companies like Vercel that you can host your website completely for free.
Wow.
And they're going to handle the scaling for you. So you're able to kind of like pay as you go. That's what's called serverless.
Yeah.
So you can do all those things. But yeah, then again, it's just very use case dependent.
It's very use case dependent. Okay. That sounds good. And so I guess I learned a lot today. I learned about like how you got into web development and sort of like the important parts of web development. I guess for anyone who wants to get started in web development, what sort of advice would you have for them?
Right. So I think it depends on where you are in your life, surprisingly, because in college, it's much easier to get into tech than it is to, you know, like already maybe already be graduated or something like that. The reason why I say that is because in college and in university, you're able to do these things called internships, which basically, you know, 2-3 month period, you probably would get paid and, you know, learn a lot, get experience, rather than, you know, you're already graduated and those internship opportunities, they're, you know, they're gone.
Yeah.
So
internships is like a whole Roman Empire, honestly.
And it's great.
I would say it's like it's very similar to the college application process, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's I get the same amount of stress. We could do a whole other episode on like the Roman Empire that is
exactly internship. Alone.
It's just internship season. But yeah, just get, you said, okay, after the internship, just like help people get educated, just start some, just start really.
Right. So there's a bunch of online resources. So what I've learned a lot was through YouTube, just like anything else, you know. If I want to learn how to, you know, fix something in a bathroom, I would probably go on YouTube or build something. YouTube is fantastic to learn. And there's obviously boot camps, but they're very, very expensive. And the reason why people do boot camps is because they want to have like some sort of credibility that they've done this. That's kind of like the second best way to do to get like experience, you know, for companies. But yeah, you can learn anything online, everything online.
Yeah.
Most of my learning is online. It wasn't through, you know, very, very expensive boot camps, like thousands of dollars. It was just like $100 using Scrimba. So YouTube is a great resource. Now, you know, in 2023, 2024 is ChatGPT.
It's a
great
AI.
Great resource too.
AI is good.
Yeah, super good.
I mean, AI is its own thing.
Yeah.
It's another Roman Empire.
Definitely.
There's a lot of intricate stuff that you learn that you'll have to learn over like the years. I think people think tech is like this, like you just learn it quick, but honestly, it can take more to like 5 to 10 years really just to,
yeah,
you can learn for 5 to 10 years and there's still more. There's still there's always something new happening. For some reason.
That's like, why I like to get into like a couple things, like diving into like a couple things, and if I really, really like it, I'll pursue it. Kind of like web dev, for example. Yeah. I've done some AI as well. Mm-hmm. I started building like, I think I only build one model in total, but I started using like machine learning and deep learning and kind of how like artificial intelligence works, you know, in some use cases. I don't know exactly how it works for ChatGPT, but for like other use cases. And yeah, I mean, it's very, very in-depth. People do PhDs in artificial intelligence, you know, to do full-time careers afterwards.
Yeah. And it's gotten to a point where, like, now everybody wants to do AI. Like, before it was, like, all blockchain. And then, like, web crypto. Yeah, web dev is even, like, do you think it's pretty saturated right now, web dev, too? Like,
it is. It's kind of like the entry row of, like, if you want to get into programming.
That's, like, the first thing you do.
Yeah, because, like, when you write code... Like, let's say if I'm writing HTML, kind of like the skeleton of the body like I was talking about, you can see it on a website. Like, you can see the result. You can see what you're typing. But if you're working on backend, you can't really see that, you know?
Yeah. It's like, so you really can't see the email authentication process, really. Yeah.
You just have to, you know, like, do testing and all these, you know, like, technical things. Yeah. So that's why front-end is actually, like, a very prominent way to get into web development. Mm-hmm. So if anybody's interested, you know, and they don't really know what to do, but they want to, you know, kind of, like, experience a little bit.
Dip their toe.
Exactly. Yeah. It'd be front-end, you know? Yeah. That's what I did, too. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, started really liking it. I was curious on the back-end, you know, what's happening back there, you know? So I opened the door, checking it out,
and now we're going to Silicon Valley for real.
Yeah, I went to California for the first internship, and then now I'm going to go to New York in summer.
Oh, that's so nice. That's really nice. You know,
free food.
How is the culture there in like Silicon Valley? Because I visited, but I was only there for a few days. How was it like culturally, from a cultural standpoint?
Yeah, it was kind of surprising. So luckily for the internship, they pay for housing. So I think it was like $4,200 or something like that for like a month on rent. All paid for, which is great.
That's worse than Miami. And Miami's bad. Miami rent is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like in the Silicon Valley, it's very expensive, all those things. Luckily, yeah, I did get the housing. It's like a 10-minute walk to go to work. But it seemed the area that I was in, Menlo Park, I believe it was within Silicon Valley. It was pretty calm, to be honest, for the most part. You know, when I would cross the street, for example, like the cars would let me pass. In Miami is a different story.
No, you don't really get that. You get
Yeah, something terrible. Yeah. The culture also was extremely fast. For Meta's, I think, core values is, like, move fast and break things. So
fail fast. Yeah, it's very much startup-like. It's very much, like, basement. It's you're going back to the Zuckerberg days where he was just in his basement coding stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's still prevalent there. That's surprising.
Yeah, it's still prevalent. Wow. Yeah, like, other companies like Google, they're, like, a bit more slower. They take their time. But something like Facebook, they just, like, they want to keep going. Startup.
Go.
You gotta go to startup FIU, you know, check it out. Another couple of tricks.
Little promo. Thank you, startup FIU, for letting us use this room.
Thank you.
I love that.
So yeah, like the people were super nice. I actually was the only Hispanic in my team.
Jesus.
And I really didn't see that many Hispanics, you know, during during the internship.
That's crazy, because we know a whole, like, 1,000 Hispanics at this point. Yeah.
So, yeah, now they're doing, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. They're doing DEI, so they're trying to, like...
But, like, for us, it's, like, a Tuesday for us to see a Hispanic. But you were the only Hispanic engineer on your team. That's crazy.
Yep. There was, like, maybe... The class of, like, the CodePath class was, like, maybe 30 people, 35 people, and maybe, like, 4 or 5 people in total were Hispanics.
Damn. That's crazy. Aren't you Venezuelan?
Yeah.
We never talked about that. We actually haven't talked about the fact that you're Venezuelan. We just say, like, cachapa life or, like, what's it like being Venezuelan in Miami? There's a bunch of Venezuelans here.
My family calls me gringo so much.
Really? Maybe that's why you were able to like fit in Silicon Valley, because you kind of looked gringo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in the secret, you were like, catch up alive.
Carepas.
Carepas.
Ya tú sabes.
Ya tú sabes.
I love saying ya tú sabes.
Yeah. It's
a Cuban thing, I think.
Yeah, but like, you know, I think Miami's like mostly Cuban. Or like, it's pretty
Cubans,
nice.
Venezuelans.
Cubans, Venezuelans, Colombians.
There's a lot of Colombians?
Yeah, there's Colombians in Doral.
I thought it was Venezuelans in Doral.
Yeah, it's Venezuelans and Colombians.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's mostly Venezuelan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have like beef with each other or something when it comes to soccer?
No idea.
You have no idea? Okay, you're a Miami boy, so I think
to Miami.
I think like people think like, did people ask you like, oh, you're from Florida?
Yeah, they get surprised. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm from Miami. Oh my god, you are?
Yeah.
And they're like from like Arkansas or something.
No, but I was like, I'm not from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never say I'm from Florida. That's so weird.
When they ask me, I'm like, yeah, I'm Venezuelan, but I grew up in Florida. That's usually what I say.
Oh, but like Miami's not Florida.
No, I know.
Yeah. You should say Miami.
Yeah, no, I say Miami. Say Miami specifically.
Yeah, Miami, guys, Miami is not Florida. I repeat again, Miami.
It's like its own different thing, man.
It's its own bubble, and it's the only place where you can see Hispanic engineers all around you,
mm-hmm.
and it's normal for us. And I think because we live in such a little bubble, that when I go out, I'm like, oh, yeah. This is the real world. This is how things really work, because it's like surprising to see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like when in my internship, I was just like, I was kind of shook, honestly, because
mm-hmm.
I was like,
and Deloitte, right?
Hmm? Deloitte. Okay. Yeah, Deloitte. They were trying to like, they were like pushing to have more diversity, but like, there was only like one person who was like half Hispanic. So it was one girl who was Hispanic and the other person was like half Hispanic. And then me.
In the team?
No, in like the cohort.
How many people in the cohort?
It was a small cohort. It was only like 30 people.
Okay.
Yeah. But still, it's like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like the same thing with mine.
Yeah, it's like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
I think because you have that community here, you don't feel that sense of like, oh, I imagine how it would be like to have people who are different than me. Like, and like, you know, you've been able to work with teams who are with people with opposing ideas, so that's helped you communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's also helped you get better at your skills in web dev. And, you know, the thing about web dev is like scaling is important, and we have to learn about system architecture. So all of that's important. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And conflicting ideas is super, super important. I remember like during the interview for Facebook, mm-hmm. I was talking about like conflicting ideas, you know, mm-hmm. like technical conflicting mm-hmm. ideas, and you know what I did to resolve them and all those things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, extremely important.
Well, Gabriel, thank you so much. I learned a lot today from you. I think the lessons that we learned today helped us a lot, you know, learning more about web development and scaling web development. It's great, and congratulations again on your Meta internship. Anything that you want to shout out, promote, you could do that right now.
Shout out to Startup FIU. First and foremost.
How can people reach you?
Yeah, you can reach me through LinkedIn, GitHub, obviously like the FIU club.
Mm-hmm.
My LinkedIn is just my name and my last name, Gabriel Pedroza, Pedroza. Mm-hmm. It should probably be like in the episode title, so
yeah.
You can use that. Same thing with GitHub and most other social medias.
Yeah, that sounds good. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Forward Thinkers Show.